Welcome to the Vibe Lifter podcast. I'm Tish, one of the Reglan Food co-founders, and I'm here to help lift your vibe with inspiring stories from people out in their local communities doing good mahi. So settle in and let's meet our guest of the day. Today, we're chatting with Marco Morawiec. He's a tech entrepreneur, Edmund Hillary Fellow, advocate for the planet, and is currently focused on transitioning 1 million people into climate-related jobs. He's also, I'm happy to say, a new addition to the Whangaroa Raglan community, moving here last year from San Francisco. Welcome, Marco.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
It's great to have you. How are you adjusting to your new beach town life?
Oh, absolutely loving it.
Yeah.
It's different, much different than what we had before. I think life couldn't be more different in a good way.
Yes.
What do you think is the biggest change? I want to know. What do you guess from moving here from San Francisco?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I guess you guys are spending a lot of time outside these days. I don't know what it was like before with the kids, but I feel like here you'd be at the beach. I know you're trying to go fishing unsuccessfully.
So anyone listens to this and want to give a rookie fisherman some advice, I'm always open.
Because I can't imagine you can just go fishing in San Francisco.
Oh, there's the ocean, but no, not really. Here's the biggest change, which this is the one that I thought was that I didn't anticipate, is all about the kids and their new schedule in San Francisco. I think much of America, I would say, schooling starts in the morning and then you have after school and somewhere in the day you have after school program. It's all like very seamless. And then your kids, you know, you pick them up at 5:30. And so your day is like you have a little bit of time in the morning with your kids.
Yeah.
Then they have this huge block of schoolwork. You don't see them. You do your work. If you go to the office or work remote, whatever it is. And then you pick them up. So you have like 2 hours in the morning, maybe 2 hours in the afternoon. Now here, everything's done at 3:30.
Yeah.
And there isn't after school programs. Doesn't really exist. It's community-based, which I love. And so I start spending a lot more time with my kids,
which I love.
And now I wrap my professional life around my family versus before the family was wrapped around the professional. And that mindset and change is, it's so awesome. But I'm also exhausted as a dad. I was like, oh my God, we did like 3 extra hours of running around and biking on the pump track today. And I'm not used to that on Tuesday afternoon. But then I have to catch up in the evening and do other things, but well worth the trade-off.
Yeah, that's such a nice change. And then in terms of the kind of professional life, the professional side, which is getting a little bit shorter now with the increased kid time. So you have a background as a tech entrepreneur. You've scaled some pretty interesting companies, some of them I know about, some I haven't heard about, and I'm looking forward to hearing about today. Can you share how you got started in the tech world and what kind of led you to that whole entrepreneur journey in the first place?
So for me, it all started in, I think it was in my bedroom. I was played around. Internet came out and I played around with Dreamweaver, building the very first websites and bit of HTML and CSS things. I was like, this is so cool. One of my first jobs was like a lot of number crunching and data. So I played with like the early statistics tools like Stata, SPSS and those. And that's what I did for a job when I lived in Hawaii, where my wife is from. So that was one thing. There was a theme in my life. And then 2010, I traveled around the world with my wife for $25 a day for an entire year, which is quite the challenge.
Wow.
But throughout that, I started blogging. Mm. And so there I learned like, you know, how to write online, how to produce content. The next thing was, as I said, I lived in Hawaii and my wife got into MIT and we moved to Boston. And I was like, oh, wow, let's see what Boston has to offer. And when we got there, I realized everyone was doing a cool tech startup. That was right around 2011, 2012, or even a bit earlier. And the Facebook movie just came out and everyone's like, we're coding, we're doing something cool. And I was like, I want to be part of that. That sounds exciting.
Cool.
But no one knew what to do with me. I was this weird guy with a strange accent, German accent. I'm originally from Germany, as you know, and just moved here from Hawaii and did some consulting data crunching stuff. No one knew it. I didn't know how to fit in or I was this oddball. And so I did what I always did. If I go back and think like how I started, I'm the very first person of my family that went to university and graduated and did all this higher education stuff and lived in many different places. And so education was always the thing that help me get to the next level. So when I was in Boston, I was like, well, I got to go back to that route. I didn't think about it as clearly, but now if I look back, I can connect the dots.
Yeah.
And so it's basically like, let me learn what I need to learn. And for me, this was more technical skills. So every night after my regular 9-to-5 job, I went to this coffee shop. Mm. I had my laptop with me. Mm. I had either a book that was teaching me something about coding and building web applications or web apps, or I had an online tutorial. And at the time, they were so bad, but I plowed through everything from basically 5:30 till 11 at night when they closed and kicked me out. I was through this every day. And then I went home and then I listened to some podcast until I fell asleep at like 1 in the morning.
Gosh,
so I did that for like over a year.
Gosh, okay.
And so while this was all happening, I was like, man, this is really fun. I can start doing something and building. And obviously I told people about it. Back then it was all about hackathons and
there were
these startup weekend events. And so I did a few of those. So then there was the biggest hackathon at the time in Boston. And I had a ragtag team of like 4 or 5 people. And so I went to this event. I stood on the stage in my wetsuit holding my surfboard.
In your wetsuit?
Pitching.
Again, that's unexpected.
In Boston. Not a lot of people surf in Boston. Yep. I surfed in Boston. So what do you guess? I'll let you guess. What do you think we built?
Was it some type of education app around sports or being active or encouraging people to be more well?
Oh, pretty close. I like your angle. No, that's not, I wasn't thinking that far ahead. I was just like, I want to become a better surfer. So let me build a little gadget that we can stick on the surfboard to calculate how long our waves are, how long we're riding, and how radical we're surfing. That was the whole thing.
This is very specific to the surf community.
Right. I was like, what would I like to
you're
have?
Like, I'm building this for myself.
Classic entrepreneur advice, like scratch your own itch. I had that itch. I was like, oh, no, do I surf better than my buddies, right? We came in second, but the prizes were the same. Like, I was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, they flew us then out to San Francisco to the global demo day. We were like 500 people. And it was the first time me being in San Francisco. And I was like, wow, it's cool. And we pitched there and, you know, we won another award. But I was like, okay, this is so cool. I can actually do something. So if you think about then all these things come together of like me learning how to code, then the pitching there, then the thinking about marketing and doing stuff. That company never went anywhere.
Right, still have but that was the practice company.
But that was the practice, right? And I also learned about teams and putting them together, but it taught me a ton of valuable lessons. And so it also gave me the confidence of like, yeah, I think I can do something here.
Mm.
Let's try this a little more. Mm. And so if you start, how did I start? It's like a lot of sweat and tears and, you know, then just trying and actually then getting a bit of validation and then thinking, great.
Was the next one a success or were there multiple kind of practice attempts before you hit upon something that really worked?
I don't know how this was for you in your entrepreneurial journey, but for me, there were so many failures.
Mm.
So the way this worked for me, like the continuation was like, I think I had 2 other ideas that I wanted to build with other teams and they all didn't really work. But what always stuck to me is like, again, and this is like, you know, coming back to who you really are and what matters in your life. And I said before, like education was always core to who I am and something that helped me. And this was all very natural. Like while I did all that, the hackathon and like coding and teaching myself and people asking me, how did you learn this? And I taught myself, well, how do you do that? Right.
Yeah.
And then people were like, can you teach me too? And then, but the majority actually, they didn't want to learn. They just asked, can you build this app for me? I have this app idea. And that was like also, you know, back early days, App Store came out and everyone was all of a sudden a millionaire because they had a successful app. So everyone, I have an idea for an app. Who can build it? And everyone wanted a co-founder and technical co-founder. And my answer to everyone was like, no, I can't build everyone's app, but I can teach you how to do it. I started teaching a few people and then I was like, you know what? Maybe there's something to it. Didn't do much with that thought.
Mm.
I had a job at a tech company in Boston. I left my job at the startup. Also classic, like everyone asked me, what are you going to do? I was like, I don't know, but it needs to be my own company. And I have no idea how many people probably behind my back thought, this guy's so stupid. I found somebody who I liked working with, my co-founder back then, and we were working on a few ideas, but nothing was ready. And we signed up to all these networking events and we walked into one. When we walked in, they said, hey, everyone who comes in here needs to pitch an idea.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, we're not ready to pitch anything. And my co-founder was like, well, what are we going to do? And I was like, well, what we're going to pitch is we teach everyone how to build an app in a weekend. His reply was, quote, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. And I said, you pitch whatever you want. I'm going to pitch that. You had 30 seconds. And I said, hey, I'm Marco. I'm going to teach everyone how to build a web app in a weekend. If you want to know more, come see me. That was my 30 seconds. Everyone went around the circle. Then it was over. And people came to me and they said, hey, Marco, where can I learn more about this?
Yeah.
When are you doing this?
I'm ready for your course. I don't actually have anything.
In 3 weeks, how much is it going to be? $100. And they're like, oh, that's good.
That's a very affordable course.
Where can I sign up? Why don't you give me your, I can have your email. I email you a link to the website. And this was back then, everyone gave me business cards.
Right.
So I had 8 business cards. I was like, oh,
okay,
that's pretty good.
This sounds $800 of signups.
Maybe $400 of revenue here if I have a 50% conversion. I didn't think about that way. I thought, oh my God, 8 people pay for this.
Mm.
And then I walked to my co-founder, business partner, and said, hey, what did you pitch? He's like, oh, you stupid idea. And how did you do it? And I said, I got 11 business cards. And I was like, whoa, how much did you say it's going to be? And he's like, oh, $100. I said, great. We said the same. When is it going to be? I said 2 weeks. I was like, oh, you're more optimistic than me. And so right after that, we talked to a few more people at the event, but then we left. And This is now 9:30, 10 at night. We straight went back to, a coffee shop. I don't know where we were. And we hacked up a simple first website and said, like, learn to code in a weekend.
Yep.
And then emailed everyone
And
sat there till 1 a.m. hitting refresh. And no one signed up. We're like, this is not going to work.
Well, they're all asleep.
They're all asleep there at the party, but that's how we thought, right? Then I think the next day or so, the first person signed up. And then the next one. And then I don't know how this happened. Somebody talked about it. That's a cool event. And then we had 25 people paying us $100. We had no curriculum. We had no room. We had nothing.
Yeah.
But that's how the very first time I made money from something without having actually anything yet was that. So that was the start. I was like, oh, that is very interesting. Like, I can tell how the whole succession, but this was again, now me standing in front of people, educating, sharing what I learned, helping them become successful. And that was my entire career. I've done nothing else but that.
Cool. Okay. So that's how you kind of got started. And then some lessons that you've learned. So you've talked about finding people to work with that you like. So that's obviously one that's stuck in there. And then it also seems like there's something around not being afraid to just put an idea out there and see if it sticks. Like you did quite a lot of pitching and events and just testing things. Is that one of them as well? Or are there other things that you did?
The second one you said all about testing is probably the most important. Mm. I assumed that at the very beginning of my journey, and I still assume that today, that all my intuition, my gut, my hunches, they're obviously more refined now than they were when I started, but I assume they're not right. And I need to test it and get validation, get some type of data or some type of feedback back. And then if that's the case, the most valuable thing you can do is to execute and not hold back or stand back. So to me, that is, if I have an idea and I think that's something, I'm saying, man, it would be so cool if this would work out, if we could do that. So I can dream about that for 3 weeks and the 3 weeks are gone. Or I can be like, hey, this is what I'm going to do.
And just start.
And this is what it is. And if it's crickets and no one cares about it, then I can be like, well, maybe I talked to the wrong people. So that's one thing I can't.
And just pivot to something else.
Don't sell running shoes at the wrong place where no one likes to run, right? Where everyone likes to swim, that kind of idea. But ultimately, if it's just crickets and no one cares about it, then, you can push a little bit, but then don't go there. Try something else or try it later again. Maybe the time isn't right. So to me, it's all about that execution of, I have a thought, I have an idea. Let me talk to some people and feel this out. Usually that refines it a little bit, changes it, maybe slightly to the left, slightly to the right, but then keep executing on that and move. And if you have something that people want, you will realize that very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And so many people don't do that. They hold back.
Yeah.
They're a bit afraid. They feel uncomfortable. And I mean, one of my life things, like, life starts outside of your comfort zone. And so that's where you need to be. And then a lot of people, the other thing that I see a lot, and everyone has tendency, including myself, is like, well, let me do the first thing, the things that are most comfortable to me. That's not what you think, but it's like, so if you example good in design, and that'd be going to be like, oh, let me design
the
website.
Logo.
And let me do the logo, right? It's like, no, what's the most critical thing that prevents this from being successful? And that's where you go. And if you're really uncomfortable there, it doesn't matter, but that's where you need to be.
Yeah.
Because if you don't figure that out, nothing will ever go anywhere. It doesn't matter if you have a logo, cool website. And then once you notice that, you actually start to also feel okay with, like, hey, I'm going to do this now.
Yeah.
And then 4 weeks later, it's like, somebody was like, hey, are you still doing this? No, this is the worst idea ever. Like, no one wanted this. We're not going to do this, right? Like,
but at least you know.
But
you
know, I know.
And, it and you found
but
out.
You don't feel, I don't feel bad about having disappointed anyone. The only person who should be disappointed is me.
Mm.
That, no, I probably spent 4 weeks on the wrong thing because yeah. But I didn't know and I have all these learnings from it.
Yeah.
So I think to me, it's execution and moving forward is the only way to do this.
That's the magic. Yeah, I completely agree. More recently, your focus has been in climate. What was the inspiration there to go from, I don't know if you call it straight tech entrepreneurship, sort of with what you're doing with education and so on, into focusing on the climate space? Was there like a little moment that tweaked that or was it gradual?
So let's go back to where I taught people how to code in a weekend. What happened back then is like we ran these weekend events and all of a sudden I was basically running an events company where every weekend I was somewhere else at a university. Then we quickly realized it's really hard work to work every weekend and then during the week trying to figure out everything else and improve your curriculum. And then we're like, can we do this online?
Yes.
Which back then, not a lot of people were doing. It was kind of like online education wasn't really a thing. So we did that. And then this is about all about execution. There was this one conversation I had, the one person told me, hey, Marco, your courses are so inspiring. Thank you very much. I just signed up for this in-person coding bootcamp and I'm going to go there. And it's like a 3-month long program. So I looked up how much that cost and it was like $10,000.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, I just helped somebody who paid me $200 for my course to go for something that's $10,000. And they're super happy that I helped them find that path. And so I was like, why are we not doing that?
Yeah, we need to charge more.
And this is all about execution, right? So now I had like, oh, that'd be cool. But I was like, I'm not going to do this in person. I think we can do this online and we can do that better.
Mm.
So I went to my co-founder and I said, hey, I think there's something here. And he said, I quote you, that's such a stupid idea. And I was like, I heard that once before.
Yeah,
like, let me try.
I have another idea.
I take 1 week to test this out. And so I had no website. I had nothing. I had a bunch of people that went through our course and emails. And I emailed them and asked them to jump on a call with me because I have something I wanted to share with them. And I felt super uncomfortable because I had half a page of notes what we're trying to do. That's how far I thought.
Right.
And I jumped on calls like, hey, this is what we want to do. Is this something you'd be interested in? Because you were one of the people who said you want to learn more. And we didn't have more yet because we didn't have another course built. People said yes. And then me being like, okay, if you want to make this happen, then you put yourself in a position where you're now forced to do it. So I said, if you want this to happen, it's going to be, I think I said $5,000. So half of what the in-person was online, twice as long. And we're going to do it better. You mean to put down a $500 deposit. And then people did that to a PayPal account that I set up while I was on the call with the first few people. And then after the end of day two, I walked to my co-founder and said, hey, I just booked more revenue in those 2 days than we did in the last 2 months before.
Mm.
I have till the end of the week. I'm going to blow this out of the water and you can stop working on this course.
Yeah,
you
let's redirect.
Take 4 days off and let me do this. We're going to build this next thing. And he's like, oh my God, you're crazy. So that was like this whole execution thing. So that led me to start the first online coding bootcamp, scaled it up. And then that got acquired by the fastest growing ed tech company at the time.
Mm.
And then I went there and scaled up their program to like 10x what we did before. And this was the first time that I worked with founders who are very experienced before. And then we got acquired again. So I went from a team of like 12 or 15, my bootstrap core team, to like company of 500, 4,000. And so I learned a ton throughout that in terms of what it means working a big company, small company, and like getting things done in a bigger context and a much bigger scale. And really valuable lessons. And then that was all when my first child was born.
Yeah.
Pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And then I was like, is this where I want to be? I'm an entrepreneur. I love doing things from nothing to the first iteration.
Yeah.
And so I had all these thoughts. So eventually I was like, it's not for me to be at
a giant
huge company.
Mm.
And I always have this tendency to replace myself and fire myself for my job. So if I find somebody who can do something better, you do that. And I look at the next thing that we need to do to become good and better. So I had a really great team in place. So eventually I was like, hey, I'm going to step back. I advise you. Everyone has this under control.
Yeah.
And I'm going to think about what I do next. What happened next is what I didn't anticipate. Obviously, pandemic hit. My wife is like, hey, you know, you always been talking this big game about how all your friends in Germany, the dads would stay at home for like 6 months or even longer and take care of their kids full time. And now would be a good time for you to do because all the schools just closed. So this pandemic stuff. So you hired and you start tomorrow. And I was like, what?
Ooh, okay.
And then that was my new job.
Yeah.
And I did that for well over a year. We planted 200 plants, put in an irrigation system. We built a deck. So all of this was like me obviously building a really good, strong relationship with my kids, right?
Yeah.
And when they came back to like preschool and daycare, I was like, great, things are opening up again. So then I was like, what do I want to do next? The one thing I care about is that these two little kids have a good future.
Yeah.
And if they're going to ask me in 5, 6, 7 years, Dad, what are you doing that helps the planet? I want to have a good answer. And so I thought about that. I was like, what can I do? And then that led into the same thing where I told all this other stuff. It's all about execution. Like, what can I do next?
Yeah.
But that was the North Star, is like, I want to have a good answer for my kids when they ask me that question. Because the more I looked into it, now looking back, connecting the dots again, I was like, this is the most defining issue that we have right now as humanity. So this is worthwhile for me to put all my effort into it. And then if I can be a hero to my boys, like there's no better combination.
So true. What was the initiative? What are the projects that you're currently involved in? If there's multiple, what are you excited about with them?
When we started out, we had a few ideas and probed a few things. And then we went to the people who invest money into the climate economy, into several subsectors. And we asked pretty straightforward, it's like, what's number one, two problem for all your portfolio companies?
Mm.
What do they struggle with? The answer was like, number one or two, it's always a toss-up, is raising follow-on funding, which makes sense. They want to grow capital-intensive infrastructure plays. Number two, finding leadership talent. And then my ears perked up. I said, hold on. Can I ask you more about that, right?
Yeah.
And then it was basically like, well, you know, it's really hard. We've never done anything like that before, ever. Like scaling a novel technology or even an infrastructure play, never brought it to that type of scale. Just think about like, okay, we need to replace so much energy with renewable energy. Who has ever done this?
Yeah,
like, okay,
it's
you
new
maybe
for everyone.
Build a bunch of solar panels, but can we do this 100x more? And also in 2 years, what? So who do you need for that, right? And so that's the talent pool shrinks really quickly. And you also really don't know who you need to something. And there's a lot of these type of technologies that are right at the stage where they need to scale for us to reverse climate change and the effects of climate change. But they're at that stage where they need scaling. And there's very few people who actually know how to scale something at the level that we need. So we had this issue that we uncovered of like, okay, this is a problem for the investors, for the company to access the talent because they didn't really know what they needed. And then we went to the other side and that was me. This is again, like executing and trying it. I wrote a post on LinkedIn and I basically was like, hey, so I talked with 30, 40 people in climate and here's what they say is the most important stuff. If you want to talk more with me about this, I help thousands of people transition careers. I have a few thoughts on how you would do this. Here's a link to my calendar. And then I hit send and then I went to have lunch. And then I came back.
And you had a very full calendar.
And then my calendar, luckily for some default reason, only 2 weeks of my calendar was
open. Oh, that's good.
But the 2 weeks were full. And okay, great. So this is again, signal, right? Like, is there a need for something?
Yeah, and you got that response.
And so I was like, okay, on the one side of the marketplace, it's like hard to hire. And the other one's like, people don't know how to do that. And they will talk to somebody like me. I have one LinkedIn post, got 100 likes, and now my calendar is full. What do I know? You look at my background. There's nothing on that I'm like this climate expert or anything, right?
Yeah.
But I was like, this guy helps people transition, and that's what I need.
Right.
And I was like, okay, interesting. So then I went to my co-founder. I was like, hey, my calendar is full now. And he's like, jump on all the calls, take notes, learn.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. And it's like, what's hard for you? What's the issue? And a few core themes evolved. Then we were thinking like, okay, what can we do with this? And then we basically said, okay, here's one thing we can do. Went to the investors and we're like, could you send people from your portcos and actually come talk to people about what your specific challenge is in the subsector that you're in? Tell me what prevents your company from where it's currently at to move to the next stage, whatever that is, right? And if you think you've run companies before, if I come to you as some as a leader in a company, it's like, what's hard right now? You're like, this.
Yeah,
if
that, you got your list ready.
Not by next week, I'm going to like, oh my God, I'm going to not sleep anymore. And that's what we're basically doing. And what that does is if you start laser focusing on this is the solution space we're in, talk energy, talk microgrids, and the commercialization and the go-to-market strategy of those solutions. Now, if I show you that, and then you realize this is actually exciting, and then you have some experience from scaling other things, or you worked for 10 years, and you're at that mid-career level, you could be like, man, this is cool. I think I could help out here. I've done something very similar before. And all of a sudden, I feel like I can activate you. Mm. You had your cool tech job, or you had your job, or you made a solid salary, but you had this urge that like, I want to do something in climate because I know it's important. Maybe I had kids, there were other things, pandemic hit. I was wondering what should I do with my life? How can I have more impact? And you thought about this, but you didn't know how to, and it felt so vast and big and confusing. Mm. And now somebody like me comes along and was like, this problem, I think you've done that before. Hell yes. Let me get off the bench. I jump in there.
Yeah, and you're showing them the parallels.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. And then you notice like, it's like they don't even think the way I do because, you know, I've scaled something like that at this company or that, and they don't have the framework or the mindset. I was like, yeah, because they're focusing on decarbonizing cement. They don't think about like how you scaled data center infrastructure up when you build it the very first time, but it applies one-to-one to what they're trying to do with the first factory, right? And so then all of a sudden you can walk in and have a really solid conversation about how you could help versus before you're like, I'd like to work in climate. I'm really passionate about it. And yes, I do my recycling. And I was like, how can I don't know what you will do if you come into office tomorrow.
Yeah. And it's such a unique space because it's not like they can go out and find an experienced CEO who has scaled recarbonizing cement before because no one's done it. So they have to find people from kind of parallel industries.
Yep.
Right. So you're basically creating this kind of talent pool for the climate space that know how to pitch themselves for these jobs.
That's one part. I think a small part. I think the bigger part is that we now built this community. It's called Climate Drift, by the way. And our members go, they come, they listen to experts coming in, talking about what the keep me up at night challenges are right now. Mm. They jump in, they look like I could help here. We help them study up and get smart and see the world the way the experts see it in that space. And that's the part where the education comes in. And then we actually have them write about this.
Oh.
We have a newsletter with thousands of subscribers on it.
Mm.
And these are not people who want to look jobs. These are people who are in the climate sectors. Mm. And these are the investors with their portco companies. And we call it a deep dive. They write about, here's the challenge right now for this battery storage, for circular economy, whatever it is, whatever they think I could do best. They describe the problem. We have a formula for this. They give all the educational content so it helps other people's as well. And then it's like, and here's how I think we should tackle this based on what I've seen before. And so what this does then is it completely flips the whole job search, which is the soulless grind on its head versus before, you know, you look to your cover letters, you apply, you don't hear back, you get ghosted, you get screened out by a recruiter. And other than that, people come to me and it's like, Marco, I don't know what to do, but you know, I IPO'd two companies, which you as an entrepreneur know how rare this is. And now I'm here with the recruiter. It's like, yeah, you know, I don't think you have the right scaling experience for us.
Yeah, because they're just ticking boxes. And they're
and you're like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't know how many people did that. I don't know anyone else who did this twice. But yeah, thank you very much. And then I get a pro forma, thanks for your application email 10 minutes later. And I'm like,
okay, frustrating.
I don't want to be in this climate space anymore. I was like, but that's the talent we need, right?
Yeah.
And so that happens every day, hundreds of thousands of times, I imagine. And so those are the people who then write about this and be like, here's how I propose this. And this is my background.
Mm.
And so,
and then they can people come along and go, oh, I want that person. That person
and then
looks
people
perfect
come and
for
be
what
like,
I'm,
you know, rather than it's like, hey, I'm so passionate about climate. How can I help? And here's my background. Let other people connect the dots. Our members connect the dots for people read that. And now the before after is this is like this, these networking calls never went anywhere. The job applications get ghosted. And now people reach out and it's like, hey, we need that type of thinking at our company. Can you come talk more with us?
Yes.
We have the same issue. The first time we were like, this is working. The model that we have is working. The system is when one of our, in the very first cohort, a member wrote something about the circularity of IKEA.
Okay.
And he was like, I'm product manager. I worked for Spotify and a couple he was basically like, IKEA has this idea of like, how can we show at the point of purchase somebody the right data that they can make a decision based on should I buy new, should I buy used? And how does the operations in the background work on that? And he was basically like, okay, here's how, what data would surface, how it would look, did a bunch of mockups, put that all in that post, and was basically like, here's how IKEA should, you know, use execute circularity to make save all this money, and here's the whole business plan on how to do that with the mockups. And he's like, that was fun, took me a few hours to do, but this is much better than writing cover letters.
Yeah.
And then we sent that out, and obviously we're head of sustainability and all this IKEA on our newsletters, and we can literally see that that person just opened it 80 times. That's not him that they forwarded. The team's opening right now. Reach out. And then literally like 2 hours later, we get a forwarded email. And it's like, oh, look at that. And we read and it's like, yeah, I forwarded this to the team. They're all reading it. Product team 1, 2, 3 all want to talk to you. When do you have time? Right. And he's like, holy smokes. And I was like, this is, I never had this ever. Right. And I was like, you, that's why you're part of this community, because you got what it takes and you know how to scale something and they need that, but they don't think like you because they've never been in tech. They like think about where they were. Maybe they have some talent, but that's exactly who we need to bring in. And so, that's the stuff that happens when you, you know, bring smart people together and make them solve interesting challenges, and they actually matter for humanity immensely.
That's so cool. And then you just set that really big kind of audacious goal of 1 million people, right? So you want 1 million of those stories that you just told.
Exactly. So you got to start small, but you need to think big. And so this is the first thing. So right now we've seen the network effects already happening. Like just this morning happens, like somebody emailed me, a speaker, somebody who's in our network and helps us out with our members. It's like, hey, I used to work at Google X, the Moonshot Factory, which is one of the coolest places to work if you're anywhere in tech. And like, they solve things like crazy. And it was basically like, hey, my good friend needs a few people in leadership positions for her project at X. Do you want to share this with the network?
Because I
know
do.
Your people. And I was like, yeah. And actually, we have another member who also works there. So now I can be like, hey, here's a speaker who trusts half of you already and trusts that you're high quality because you're all screened and vetted to be part of this community. And we have a member who also works there. So I've totally did all the networking work for you.
Yes.
If you want that, like the doors are wide open. Yeah. You can literally walk through. And so that is kind of this, like, you know, your network is your net worth kind of saying, like this helps so much. So, because these are going to be some of the most competitive jobs to get out there. And the bar is really high, but you have a huge leg up. And that's not just like, oh, well, Marco, that's great. You're creating this gated thing. It's like, well, we actually pre-interviewed everyone to be part of this community.
Yeah, that's kind of the point, so you know that they're the right fit.
Exactly. And these people helped so many other people in the process already and giving back. And I think that's the community we're building right now. And then we have plans for making this bigger and bigger and bigger, but that's where we're at right now. We'll get to 1 million, but you got to start with the first few thousand fans first.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, amazing. I have a question around sort of the role that technology plays in solving climate challenges. There's a lot of people who, I don't know, maybe rely on it too heavily. There's other people that think it's just a load of fluff and it's not going to solve anything. I know there's no silver bullet, but where do you think technology can have the most impact?
There's hundreds of different solutions in the climate space, climate economy. So we actually mapped that out, 220 plus solutions that are now ready to be scaled across, I think, 12 or 15 or so subsectors.
Wow.
So the first thing anyone listens to is that you cannot be an expert in all of this. It's almost impossible. You take so much time. But if you didn't think about where does technology play a role into that, it plays a role into all of them to a certain extent and a different extent. And if you think about if you do anything infrastructure heavy, that is technology, the whole hardware, right, that you need to do. So I'll give you an example. Industrial heat is a huge topic of like, how do we melt steel? How do you melt certain kind of produce certain raw materials that we need to build our world? And that's a huge input. Right now, this is all powered by gas, oil, diesel, right? To create the heat to melt steel. But we can also do it through electricity and a lot cheaper. So that's now you think about, oh yeah, same, cheaper. Is it better for the environment, right? But it's like, okay, better for the environment. Yeah, sure, because it's renewable and we can now maybe use solar panels and batteries. But now you're thinking about, okay, what are all the stuff I mentioned is technology, right? And that needs to somewhere there. You need to have a software layer, a hardware layer on that. It's a lot of engineering, mechanical, as well as software. Mm. Thinking about that. Then there's nature-based solutions. They're huge and they're super, super important, right? Mm. And so some people is like, hey, we can't innovate ourselves out of climate change and the effects of that, right? We need to protect nature and the biosphere. Yes. 100% yeah. Right. And they're super important. And if you look at, you know, I spent close to a decade in California. And when you look at what just happened in Los Angeles with those wildfires, catastrophic, terrible, right? We had family there at like evacuation orders. Mm. And my friends there is like crazy. I know people who lost their houses and it's absolutely devastating. But then you look at it like, why? So much finger pointing and blaming. And I hear the people who say like, oh, what we need to do is like, we should have advanced AI satellite imagery monitoring for any type of smoke and then send a bunch of automated drones up with water and they do this. And I was like, okay, tech people, I get it. But you know what's also missing? Having water at the right spot. The nature and the biosphere around LA is completely degraded. Yeah. And we put all the streams into canals and underground. And so there's no more evaporation. So everything is bone dry. So you, when a wildfire happens and nature is working correctly, then it won't be as crazy, even if you have super strong winds, because everything is at least somewhat moist. So firefighters will have a chance to get there and then maybe
hold it back.
Mm. A few houses burned down, right? And then there's also like the simple things, building codes, super important. Are these houses all built so they go up in flames at the slightest
whiff of smoke?
Whiff of smoke, right? And yes, because old housing stocks. And so to me, this is a balance of both. I don't think we're going to have a single solution, but it's like a mosaic of solutions.
Yeah.
And it will be a lot of nature rewilding, reforestation that is critical and that nature's do its thing. Technology will play its role too, but you got to look much broader than just like one or two solutions.
And then this is kind of connected to that too, thinking about collaboration versus competition. Like, do you think that's part of it, that people just aren't talking to each other? Or, you know, you're over here working on this, they're over there working on that, no one's communicating, and then we end up with two solutions that really should have been merged. Do you think that there's more collaboration happening in the climate space, or do you think it's still following the same sort of capitalist model of like, oh, I'm going to keep my secrets to myself? You know?
I think the climate economy in general is very open and welcoming, much different than tech.
Mm.
And climate is kind of like at that moment, the climate economy, where it's taking off. I mean, people in the space say, I've been doing this for 10 years. And we had like the ups and downs, roller coasters of funding and crises already. But I get it. But for most people, this is now a burning topic, top of mind. So this is when people are like, hey, I want to, all of a sudden you're cool working in climate already. And that hasn't, that wasn't
that
the thing 5 years ago,
long,
right?
Yeah.
And it was the same in tech when Facebook became this huge success and everyone's like, oh, I want to be, I want to have a startup. And I experienced that in Boston, right? And that was the whole rise of all the boot camps and upskilling happened there. And so climate is at a similar moment right now, but way more open. If you join communities and you ping people, lots of people will jump on a call with you and actually give you advice. And you can have that access. And I see that every single day and it's good. And the thing is not that, you know, we're selling this one widget that shows you better ads online and we want to make sure that we have more market share. It's like, no, like we all need to win. And there is enough demand for this. And there's enough of a huge challenge in front of us that it doesn't actually matter. Like if I'm a little bit more ahead than you, I mean, I'm not going to tell you our secret sauce, but we can work together and collaborate. And I see that all over the place.
No, that's really encouraging. It was nice to hear that. Final question. I wanted to know, is there anything you're reading, watching? You're a guy who loves learning, listening to, just kind of general inspiration that other people might want to check out.
Okay, so there's some general stuff. So if you're thinking about entrepreneurship and the right mindset and that, there's one of my favorite books. It's called The Obstacle is the Way.
Oh, yes.
I think by Ryan Holiday.
Ryan Holiday,
yeah. Good memory. And I love that. The thesis is basically like, you have a mountain in front of you, there's the only way is through. You learn the most through, and it will be painful, but it'll be worth it. Or it's something that you don't want to do, and then you don't go through the mountain. You go left or right and change completely. But if you decide that's the way, then you go through. Super good book, in my opinion, if it comes to entrepreneurship and the right mindset. Mm. There's so many books out on climate change and what does, but I actually, for that, I'd like to go to fiction. And there's this book called The Ministry of the Future.
Oh, I've wanted to read this. And I've heard about this.
It's science fiction. You read that and you wonder, I wonder how we solve this issue and this issue. And then you see their solutions. And I'm getting chicken skin goosebumps right now. And I don't want to put any spoilers. You're like, holy shit, that's how they dealt with it. Oh my God, that is either radical or so smart or so cool, right? And it gives you like a way of looking at that in terms of like how this could all work.
Yeah.
And it's messy and it's a few steps forward, a little bit back, and a lot of trials and tribulations. But I think that's how humanity evolved.
That's how we
general.
Work. Yeah. The smooth path doesn't seem to be the one we take.
Exactly. And that's one. And then there's this other sci-fi book. Sorry, now you're outing me as a sci-fi nerd. It's called The Three-Body Problem. It's all about what happens if an alien civilization discovers us and makes their way to its Earth. How do we react? And it plays over decades.
Oh.
It plays in China with a lot of Chinese characters. It was translated. So it's really good seeing that type of culture. You get a bit of cultural education as well, how things happen in a different culture. It's really cool because it opens your mind to how stupid we can be as humans. And if you say, like, take the aliens out and swap it out for climate change, you could see direct correlations. Oh my God, I can't believe, why is everyone doing that? And how do we give up hope versus we need them? And it goes over like hundreds of years and well into the future, all the stuff that happens. So it's really good. That's another one. And then if it comes to practical advice and deep dive, I mean, there's climatedrift.com, our newsletter.
Yes.
I have a free email course that's Find Your Climate Niche. Mm. So maybe you can put that in the show notes.
Yes, we will.
I'll give you a link to it. That's really good for people to just like, okay, here's all the stuff. We have a climate solutions map where we list out 220 solutions to just map it out so people don't get lost. So that's what people can just download and use with the free course. And then, I mean, if people want to come to Climate Drift and go through our 8-week core program accelerator, that's always something that, you know, reach out to me and I'm sure people will find me on LinkedIn, Marco Morawek. You can find me. I post there a lot.
Amazing. Well, this was great. It's so awesome to have you in the community. It really is. It feels like a real treat having you guys here. So thank you for coming, for making Raglan your new home. Thank you for all the work that you're doing in the climate space as well, and just getting people excited about the opportunities and showing them, hey, it's possible. You can shift from what you're doing into this. I think that's exactly what we need.
Yeah. No, thank you for having me, and thanks for the warm welcome of the Raglan community. We love it here, and it's an amazing community, and what people are doing here is fantastic, and that's not normal in many other places in the world. So whoever hears this right now, you should feel proud of what you're doing here.
It's a special, special place.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Vibe Lifter podcast. We hope that tuning into this interview has lifted your vibe. Check out raglanfoodco.com to learn more about the people and projects we're stoked to be supporting. A body's a true hobby, the one to shake the sun and down. I follow through with the dish that you play.